Distinguished guests, fellow delegates, ladies and gentlemen, friends, it has been 12 long months since I last addressed you at conference, but I promise you this will not be an angry speech. When I stood before you last year, we were preparing for the Westminster campaign, and so I wanted at the very outset of my speech to take a few moments to reflect on that campaign, on the result, and to thank those of you who gave us your time and your enthusiasm, especially in East Belfast, which helped us achieve our best election result ever in any constituency and saw the Alliance share of the vote rise in every constituency across Northern Ireland. The campaign was, as we expected, often bruising and at times personal. However, my abiding memory of it is the strong sense of unity of purpose, coherent message, camaraderie and team spirit, and dare I say it, even the genuine fun and laughter we had on the campaign trail. Though physically tiring and mentally and emotionally draining at times, understandably, given the enormity of the task which we faced, our passion for the message of hope and progress which we were taking to the people on the doors, and the enthusiasm with which people, both party members and supporters, came together to deliver that message, I know buoyed us all up in the constituency, and it made it a truly inspiring experience. For any of you who are feeling nostalgic for those days, we are doing a special reenactment next Saturday at the East Belfast Action Day, shameless plug, and so I hope that I will see many of you there. On a more serious note, I was really humbled and I will be forever grateful to each of you who played any part, however great or small, in that campaign. To my agent, Jim Hendren, to my East Belfast colleagues, Chris Little and Judith Cochrane, to our leader, David Ford, and our team of MLAs and councillors, to the staff teams in headquarters, the Assembly, and our constituency offices in East Belfast, particularly to my former parliamentary staff, to Julianne, Emmett, Laura, Sean, Peter, Scott, and Claire, and to Michael for everything. I can only say thank you for all of your hard work, commitment, support, good humour, and all the rest, not just in that campaign, but often through the tough and testing years that preceded it. To have polled almost 17,000 votes in the constituency was frankly beyond what we could have hoped for at the start of the campaign. To have added 4,000 votes to those polled in 2010 against the backdrop of flags protests and a five-party pact was almost miraculous. And so while I thank all of you who pounded the streets, labelled leaflets, knocked doors, donated time and money, my greatest thanks is reserved for the voters of East Belfast, who stood by Alliance and gave us their support last May. It is, of course, always disappointing not to win an election, even one where we knew from the announcement of the pact that it would not be a fair fight. However, for me, it was more important that we won the moral victory. And for those who said our win in 2010 was due to the scandal surrounding the DUP at the time, or was merely a protest vote, we have demonstrated with the help of the East Belfast electorate that it was much, much more than that. It was a sincere and sustained move to choose more progressive politics and make real change. That unionism united would pull scarcely 2,500 votes more than Alliance. That the DUP would need the help of the UUP, UKIP, TUV and PUP to win back their traditional heartland of East Belfast would have been unthinkable only 6 short years ago. But this party and East Belfast have come a long, long way, and that progress is far from over. The loss of the Westminster seat gave me an opportunity to take a break from frontline politics and reflect about what I'd already achieved and indeed whether a return to elected politics was the right thing for me to do. Having first entered politics back in 2001, in many ways the last 15 years had flown past as I moved rapidly from councillor to assembly member to group leader in City Hall. 10 years ago this year I became deputy leader of this party and then Lord Mayor of Belfast and finally MP. Many of those decisions almost took themselves, and so for the first time since I was 29, I found myself without an elected role and with a real choice about my future. It reminded me of the choice that I faced back in 1994 when I graduated from university with my engineering degree and had to decide whether I wanted to leave Northern Ireland and build a life for myself elsewhere or whether I wanted to stay and be part of trying to nurture those first green shoots of change which had sprung up with the ceasefires that year. It says a lot about how busy my life had been in the meantime and about my attitude to housework generally, that when I was clearing out my study last summer, I found our first membership cards from 1994. And as I reflected on the decision that I made then to stay and try and play a role in transforming our community, I also recalled why, for me, joining Alliance seemed to be the best way to do that. I was attracted to Alliance because of its principles. Principles of equality, of justice, of social inclusion, a commitment to human rights and to treating others with respect, to building a united community and a shared future. Principles which underpin a society free from intimidation, discrimination and fear, where everyone is safe, can play their part and will be treated fairly and with respect. And of course, in the last 22 years, we have seen progress in our society. But are any of those principles less relevant when we think of shaping a better future for Northern Ireland today than they were then, or indeed when this party was first formed? Can we claim to have a truly fair society when women still make up such a small proportion of our elected representatives and when women in the same jobs are paid on average 20% less than their male colleagues? Can we claim to have a truly equal society when the LGBT community are not only still fighting for equal marriage, but are now having to fight to maintain the limited protections they already have under Section 75, as the Attorney General seeks to make a case that those provisions for the right of access to goods and services are somehow an assault on religious freedom? Can we claim to have an inclusive society when a member of the public can make wholly unacceptable remarks about getting ethnics out to a senior member of parliament and face absolutely no challenge from someone who is elected to show leadership in the community with respect to those views? And can we claim to have overcome discrimination and segregation when nationalist parties join forces to vote to retain the inherently discriminatory fair employment exemption for teachers in Catholic schools, and when parties refuse to train our teachers in one institution despite the clear and demonstrable educational, financial and social benefits? It's clear to me that those principles which brought me to Alliance all those years ago and ultimately guided my actions as an elected representative for the last 15 years remain every bit as valid and current, every bit as needed today as they were in 1994. Of course, it wasn't just principles which got me involved or which encouraged me to come back. It was the passion that I felt for Northern Ireland and for realising that vision. Now, some of you will be aware that redheads have a reputation for having fiery tempers. Of course, those of you who know me will know I'm the exception that proves the rule. However, I think it would be fair to say over the last 6 or 7 months, whilst I was taking my break from politics and recharging my batteries, I still felt, let's say, some impatience with the lack of progress here. Despite everything which has happened in recent years, that passion I have for making a difference, for building a more shared future, a more progressive and more prosperous society, which drove me to join Alliance in the first place, is undimmed today. And so I had to make a decision whether I want to spend the rest of my life frustrated by the pace of change, passively watching as opportunities are missed and worse, squandered, and resorting to ranting at the TV and the radio to vent my frustrations, or whether I wanted to stand for election again and seek to actively play a constructive role in transforming our community. I still believed in our principles, I still felt the same passion, but I was also inspired by people, those who voted for me and supported me and to whom I have already paid tribute. All of those who spoke to me and wrote to me to encourage me to come back and to get involved. But more than that, I am constantly encouraged and inspired by the people in this party and those connected with it, who I see trying every day across the whole spectrum of society to build a better future. I want to do something which is unusual at a conference, but which highlights for me the calibre of the people we have in Alliance. I want to talk about an issue which is a matter of conscience, not of policy, and it's that of abortion. Each of us in this room will have our own views on the current law and the need for change. Each of us will occupy a different place on the pro-life, pro-choice spectrum, and in Alliance we have the freedom to act in line with our conscience on those matters, as I believe it ought to be. However, as I was writing my speech yesterday, I was listening to the radio and I heard Sarah Yurt and Jane Christie on the Nolan Show. I remember how 2.5 years ago I first met them at their family home in East Belfast, and they shared with me the tragic story of Sarah's pregnancy. Sadly, as many of you will know, her baby had formed in the womb without a head, and so there was no prospect of life outside the womb. Devastating news for any mum-to-be. Instead of being able to access a termination as she wished to do with her family and her medical team around her for support, she was forced to travel to England, as her doctors could have faced jail had they conducted the procedure here. They said that only a change in the law could help other women in that position, and they asked me for my help. A few days later, I returned to their home with David Ford, and after listening carefully to their case and researching it, he made them a promise that as far as it depended on him, he would bring forward the necessary changes and would work with others in the Assembly to try and get it resolved. He was honest about the prospects of success, but he promised to do his best. That started a process which included an extensive public consultation, drafting of legislation to change the law to permit abortion in cases of fetal abnormality. For some of you in this room, that proposed change in the law may be a step too far. For others, it will not go far enough. But I raise it today to pay tribute to David, not simply for what he did, but for the manner in which he did it. Unlike other politicians who made promises that were not kept, who held out the prospect of a free vote only to resile from it later, who said that they were personally supportive but couldn't risk voting in favour against their party or with an election looming, those who raised and then dashed the hopes of a grieving family, unlike them, David Ford kept his word. He acted with integrity and he kept the promise he made when we visited Sarah and Jane that afternoon. I am hugely grateful to David. It was not only a sensitive and even potentially divisive issue, but it was also one where he could not automatically rely on party support or backing. That is what true leadership looks like. And I am proud to be a member of the same party as David, and we are lucky to have him as our leader. I am also thankful to Stuart Dixon and Trevor Lunn, who as individuals, when David's legislation was blocked at the Executive, proposed the amendments to allow the vote to take place. And I want to thank Anna Lowe for moving the amendment to address victims of rape and sexual crime. Whilst neither of those were in the end successful, nor do they represent an Alliance consensus on the matters, it was important that the Assembly had the opportunity to debate and vote on those issues, and I'm proud that my colleagues played a leading role in allowing that to happen, not in spite of, but because of how they handled an issue where there were genuinely different views. Our principles, our passion, our people, all three helped me reach my decision, but lastly, and at the forefront in my mind in making the decision to stand again for election, was my belief that 22 years after joining Alliance, there is still a lot of progress which we need to see. And I believe Alliance is the party best placed to move us forward. Every year when I sit down to write my speech for conference, I take a look at my speeches from previous years, and what never fails to shock me is the degree to which many of the issues of the day are often the same ones we confronted the year or indeed a number of years before. It feels at times as though politics here is stuck on pause, or even worse, rewind. Let's just look at a few examples. When I stood here last year, and in almost every preceding year, I did so in the wake of some scandal, some accusation of corruption or greed at the heart of our political system, whether it was an expenses scandal, a dodgy land deal, or some other allegation which cast a shadow over the political system. And this year, again, we gather in the wake of an expenses scandal at Stormont and of fresh allegations emerging from the BBC Spotlight probe into NAMA and the Project Eagle sale. It is as though we keep replaying the same scenarios over and over again and yet learn nothing from the repetition. Nothing changes except that what was the whiff of corruption is now rapidly becoming a stench, which hangs heavily over the guilty and the innocent alike. And with every fresh revelation, every new allegation, public trust and confidence in politics and politicians is further and further eroded. Year after year, in Alliance, we have pressed for change, for swifter progress towards a fully open and transparent politics. And year after year, other parties seek to pause that progress, despite the fact that in doing so, they further fuel public mistrust and suspicion. For politics and politicians to have the confidence of the public, they must be open and transparent and accountable with respect to three things: their use of public resources, any personal or business interests, whether financial or otherwise, which could be seen to influence their decisions, and any sources of funding, benefits, or support to their party, whether financial or otherwise, which could or be seen to influence their decisions. Only by being transparent and open on all three counts can the public scrutinise and judge for themselves whether politicians are making their decisions in the public interest or in their own or party interests. There is no public or political appetite for government funding of political parties, so as parties we all need to raise funds. There is nothing wrong with receiving donations, large or small, provided that they do not influence the decisions that are taken. In every other part of the UK, any donation or donations from a single source of £7,500 or more per year is mandatory. However, Northern Ireland is exempt, a decision by the Secretary of State justified on the basis of security. Well, the time has long since passed when security can be used to justify that lack of transparency. You cannot argue on one hand that Northern Ireland is safe and stable for inward investment and tourism, and simultaneously argue on the other that it is so abnormal and dangerous that the same degree of transparency around donors cannot apply here as elsewhere. Sir Christopher Kelly, the former chairman of the Committee on Standards in Public Life, in his evidence to the Northern Ireland Affairs Select Committee, made it clear that even where a risk did exist, whether of reputational damage, of boycott, or even physical threat, this was ultimately a matter for the donor to consider and was not a justification to keep the public in the dark. I agree with him. Despite prolonged and sustained assault by both dissident Republican and Loyalist paramilitaries, which saw our party offices damaged and destroyed, and the homes and lives of party staff and elected representatives threatened, we have continued to publish our large donations in line with the standards in the rest of the UK. Furthermore, due to a conflict in legislation, to those who make significant donations to election campaigns can already be published, as recently highlighted in an investigation by The Detail. There is no evidence that this has affected anyone negatively, adding further weight to the calls which Alliance continues to make and which I make again to the Secretary of State today for an immediate lifting of the Northern Ireland donor publication exemption. And yet other parties continue to resist. Thanks to an amendment proposed originally by Alliance and adopted by government, all donations made since January 2014, which meet the publication threshold in GB, will be made public when that security exemption is lifted. That is the only tangible progress there has been on the issue. Whilst we would have preferred to have the exemption removed entirely and immediately, that was resisted by others. It was nevertheless a step forward. Those donor details conference may be hidden for now, but thanks to this party, they will not be hidden forever. We haven't stopped there. We have also been pressing forward, leading the way in councils, proposing that declarations of interest should be published online, and for at the very least, audio recording of all council committees. Public scrutiny is key to delivering open, transparent, and accountable governments. No politician should seek to pause progress towards delivering it, and the public will rightly question the motivations of those who do. But of course, transparency is just one example of the recurring political themes. There are many, many other examples from previous speeches, which I could list, that are as current now, still unresolved, and where others simply want to hold up decisions, pause progress, or keep replaying the same old arguments. Remember the issue of flags on street furniture? Unionists refused to even discuss it in 2013. Haas proposed a commission, as did the Stormont House Agreement a year later, as did perhaps the most ironically named agreement of all time, Fresh Start, a year after that. Finally, after all the heel-dragging, we're now at a position where OFM, DFM are starting to set up that commission. But of course, that's no guarantee of progress. It could so easily become yet another talking shop, replaying the same stale arguments but delivering no results. We will play our role in that commission and engage constructively, but we will not leave it in the hands of others to press this forward. Instead, we're consulting publicly on our own proposals for regulation, proposals which academic research has recently confirmed provide the best way forward to resolve the issue. Enough time and enough goodwill has been expended on this discussion. What we need now is action. From issues as significant and complex as dealing with the past and its legacy and resolving disputes around contested parades, where the arguments go round and round in ever-decreasing circles whilst those most affected continue to suffer and we continue to pay for it, to the very manner and standards of speech and attitudes displayed by some of our political representatives, where outbursts of sectarianism, homophobia, Islamophobia, racism and sexism are par for the course. And behaviour which would be career-ending in any other part of these islands is simply explained away and excused by people who ought to know better. Well, we can see why the public are frustrated and indeed cynical about politics. They want better, sooner, and have the right to expect it. And when we talk of going backwards, yesterday in my own constituency, we were reminded in the most horrific way possible just how profoundly dangerous that can be. It is only by the grace of God that we are not standing here today mourning the loss of a life. My thoughts and prayers are with the gentleman injured in that attack, and I wish him a speedy recovery, and I sent my thoughts to his family. They're also with his colleagues. My thoughts are also with his colleagues. When an attack is launched against one member of the prison service, it is an attack on all of the prison service. It shatters the peace of mind of every officer and of their friends and family. Prison officers are doing a difficult, largely unseen and often undervalued job of upholding the law and protecting the public. Any attack on them is also an attack on us. This was a reckless and potentially deadly attack in the middle of a densely populated neighbourhood by people who have no regard for democracy, for the law, for life itself, and it is to be utterly condemned. They have no strategy, no vision, nothing to offer but misery and destruction. They and those who shield them are enemies of this entire community, and the community needs to respond as one to this threat to our peace and security. Respond by pushing forward. Respond by making progress. Respond by working harder together to secure that peace and accelerate that progress. Respond by standing together in defiance of those who seek to destroy what we have achieved. Respond by ensuring that nothing they do will deflect us from continuing to build a better future. This year, the Good Friday Agreement is 18 years old. In the beginning, the Assembly and the peace process was like a fragile baby, needing a lot of care and attention from the two governments and the international community. When I was elected in 2003, it had become more of a difficult toddler. It had started taking baby steps towards fulfilling its purpose, but it was having a prolonged period on the naughty step as the Assembly had been suspended. And we have been there as it has grown from toddler to rather difficult teenager. More stable, able to do more, but still requiring frequent intervention and still without the maturity to deliver real progress for the people it serves. Well, this year it will be 18 years old, an adult. And the public has the right to expect that it starts to behave like one, taking responsibility for difficult decisions and making choices which aren't simply about short-term populism, but which are socially, economically, and environmentally sustainable. Baby steps are fine at the beginning, but we now need to see the Assembly taking strides forward. The public are weary of the pace of change being slow to stop, and so are we. One step forward, two steps back is fine on Strictly Come Dancing, but it's no way to run a country. Those young people who were born on the day of the Good Friday Agreement was signed will have the right to vote for the first time in the Assembly elections. We need to give them hope for the future, an Assembly that creates opportunity and supports progress, and a political system that inspires ambition and engenders trust. We need to give them the Assembly they can be proud of. You have all seen and heard what we have been able to deliver in the executive, both Stephen and David, making progress despite the inertia of the system within which they work. You have seen what we have been able to achieve with just 8 Assembly members out of 108. And you have seen the calibre of the people we want to get elected to that Assembly in May, their passion, their principles and their eagerness for progress. Fast forward to May the 6th, and imagine how different things would be with a stronger, bigger team of Alliance MLAs pressing forward for change in the Assembly. A team which has the numbers, the experience, the ideas and the passion to take Northern Ireland forward and to take it forward faster. One which promotes progressive policies in support of scientific, social and economic progress. One which challenges the anti-European and anti-immigration rhetoric that so often fuels racism and xenophobia. One which supports the protection and extension of equality and human rights for the LGBT community, for women and girls and for other marginalised groups. One which actively supports freedom of religion and belief, real freedom, including the right of freedom from religion, whether at home or abroad. One which has fought consistently against the burden of the government's cuts being carried by the poorest in our society, whilst tax dodgers, both corporate and individual, seem to escape any scrutiny or pressure. One which has a vision of a progressive and prosperous Northern Ireland in which everyone has the opportunity to realise their potential. One in which resources are invested in delivering high-quality shared services for the whole community rather than carved up and squandered on propping up division. It is that belief in this party, in its progressive vision and principles, in its radical policies and people, in its impressive record of delivery both in and out of government, that ultimately convinced me that I want the opportunity to be part of that team. Let's use this next 8 weeks to maximise the representation we have in the Assembly, and beyond that, use that representation to demonstrate to the people who elect us the true value of responsive institutions which make a difference in people's lives, to maximise our influence in the Assembly and accelerate the speed of delivery and change, and to bring about the progressive, liberal and inclusive society that will bring prosperity and hope to the people we represent, to move forward, faster, together. Thank you, Conference. Conference, it is now my honour and privilege to invite our party leader and Justice Minister, David Ford, to come to the platform and to tell you his vision as he leads us into the most important election campaign that we have fought since last year.